Hey folks, this is Simon Ward. Welcome to the High Performance Human Podcast. It's time for another episode where we are devoted to helping you achieve optimal human performance. Please check out my website, simonwardtriathloncoach.com, for all my latest blogs and send your questions to beth@thetriathloncoach.com. If you're not already a subscriber to the show, please go to simonward.podbean.com, where you can subscribe and make sure you don't miss any of our weekly episodes. Welcome back, listeners. So today I am joined by Adam Veit. Now, Adam is a curriculum developer at Precision Nutrition. His true title there is Head Strength and Psychology Coach for Precision Nutrition. So he advises and writes a lot of the education content that's coming out. I guess you, Adam, would have had a hand in writing the Precision Nutrition Level 2 that I studied last year, I suppose.
What a great course, right, Simon? We were just talking about that. And I actually spent about 4 years instructing the course. So live boots on the ground and working with hundreds of students. So it was really an incredible opportunity and actually what's probably brought us together today. So I'm really fortunate to be here.
Well, I've done this in a roundabout way, Adam. I should have said welcome to the show first. So thank you for being here. We've had a few obstacles getting this together because you had a power outage when we were due to chat last week, didn't you?
In
the town you live in.
It was quite the experience. I think in the past few years, as we've settled into the new area in Massachusetts in the United States, we're good for about one or two power outages a year. So my father was like, when are you going to learn? I've been telling you to get a generator. So I still haven't got that, folks. It's probably a good idea now, but we lost some food and we played a lot outside and we went camping in the backyard, but everybody is good.
Yeah, it's... Pre-show, we were just talking about how the coronavirus situations affected everybody, and we're going to discuss that a little bit more. But I used to giggle a little bit when I read about the survivalists and the preppers, but now I think they knew something was coming.
Yeah, it's opened up a really interesting dialogue with my own kids, because not only do you talk about maybe some of the privileges that they might be used to or just how other people have to adapt, but it's been interesting to talk about how fortunate we are and some of the situations that other people around us may not have. So in a way, I've kind of viewed it as a good grounding experience for myself and my family to kind of always put things back into perspective.
And part of that prepping would be to have a generator, I guess.
Yeah, I think this is the year. I'm going to start saving. They don't obviously come cheap. So we'll see how the rest of the season, now that we have hurricane season approaching us, which is what happened. We had a tropical storm rip through the Northeast and cause a lot of power lines and trees to come down, and including my own yard. So we'll move forward from there.
Great. Well, we touched a little bit on some of the skills and qualifications that you have. So perhaps you could outline how you've got to this point in your journey, because I'm looking at you here on the screen, Adam. You don't look to be that old, so you've packed a lot into your young life.
We have done. I actually just turned 35 last week and been very fortunate to have quite the career, really in all dimensions of health and fitness and nutrition coaching. So I started off going to undergrad as an exercise science major. That was my dream goal. I wanted to be a Division I university head strength conditioning coach. That was all my eggs were in that basket. So I rode that train very hard. I actually became the youngest head strength conditioning coach in the United States at the time at 24 years of age, and got there, had another opportunity to promote my skills and abilities to the next level. We were talking earlier about professional sports. So I spent a year in the National Football League with the Carolina Panthers. And at that time, everything was in life, I should say, was happening. So my partner, she was a college strength conditioning coach as well. We were getting married. We were buying a house. Eventually, we would become pregnant. So, we made a lot of life decisions on where to go from there. And I ended up co-founding a youth sports performance facility in the state of New Jersey. So we did that for about 5 years. And about halfway through that period of time, an opportunity at PN opened up to join the team full time. I've been following Dr. John Berardi's work since really the beginning near 2005 when I was an undergrad, and an opportunity to join the team as a seminar presenter, as a podcaster, and eventually a level two master coach opened up. So I've been doing that for the last 4 years. This past year, I've shifted into more curriculum development as we've expanded our certification opportunities and educational experiences for students like yourself. And I'm now wrapping up, hopefully, in I'd say 4 to 8 weeks from finishing my PhD in sport and exercise psychology. So we've been busy, as you can say.
You have. You need to take a breather. Let it all sink in.
I'm hoping. I've saved a couple of vacation days when after my defense, and I plan on using them very slowly and wisely.
Well, if it's like the UK, you won't be going very far very soon.
I think we're going to be staying put. I'll probably pitch the tent back up.
Yeah, indeed. It's very topical that we should be chatting right now because I am currently introducing my tribe of triathletes to the Precision Nutrition Pro Coach system and starting to sign people up ready for the year-long program. To begin in September. And so I thought this might be a good opportunity for you to just tell us a little bit more about Precision Nutrition for people who've been listening to me talk about it and trying to persuade them to join my coaching program. Maybe you could talk about it from the perspective of the HQ and, you know, the general philosophy behind Precision Nutrition, how it works, what makes it different from other nutrition programs. And also then maybe move on to ProCoach, because that's a fairly recent introduction, isn't it? And how ProCoach works, and particularly because they've just changed it, haven't they? And they've introduced the new beta version now, which has got some adjustments. So a lot of questions for you to go out there. Let me know if you need me to remind you of any.
Yeah, so great question and really appreciate the opportunity to talk about PN, and I'll try and take them one by one. But essentially, Precision Nutrition is the largest nutrition coaching certification and software company in the world, especially from an online perspective. And we've been working with professionals like yourself and coaching clients for really the better half of the last 15 years. And what's been really unique to see how the world has evolved, how we've adapted, but more so how the company has changed, is finding out all of the opportunities that we as a corporation and a company not only have grown, but have been able to grow our reach within the health and fitness and nutrition industry. And, you know, we were talking earlier about being high performance coaches and, you know, really maximizing their physical development. Well, I think most of society, if not everybody, has really accepted, if you're in the field, that it's going to take more than training really hard, right? And so what PN has done and continues to do a really nice job of is tying in all of the elements in a client's life, in a coach's industry, to really bring the full package of high performance lifestyles and nutrition coaching and whatnot. So, you know, we pride ourselves on being a very research-based, a very life-changing personal nutrition and lifestyle coaching company for everyone, because that's the confines or the constraints or the realities of people's life. So a little brief history. We originally started off, you know, providing coaching services to clients. So clients would contact us and we would assemble a team of coaches and they would work with, you know, group-based model of providing coaching services. So whether that was to lose weight, that was to gain muscle, body recomposition, or essentially, you know, feeling better in their skin, it's really evolved to a little bit more than that. And then we saw an opportunity to, what about helping the professionals? What about helping the personal trainers, the strength conditioning coaches, all of these other different areas of health and wellness? And can we provide them with gold standard education, not only from a certification standpoint, but also from a mentoring perspective and continuous professional development resources for them so that they can continue to get better and they can pass it on to their clients? So we started off with the Precision Nutrition Level 1 certification, which has gone through now 4 revisions over the past year. We've just launched our fourth version last year. It's been incredible to see the evolution of that and the tools and resources we provide. And so that's really been a game changer for the industry of giving clients, or excuse me, the coaches, not only the nutrition science behind that, because I think, you know, Simon, you and I were talking like that's traditional sport nutrition, right? You're going to hear about your X per grams of Y nutrient at hour and intervals and whatnot. But what about the art of coaching? And I think that's something I've been really fortunate to be a part of PN and working side by side, not only within the company, but also my experience working in high level athletics and then running my own business. So we've got the Precision Nutrition Level 1 certification. We then took that to a year-long master class program, which I was able to teach for 4 years, where now we take the true art of coaching, the communication, really trying to understand your client's behaviors, their goals, and really improve the communication between coach and client and understand that I call it the coach-athlete relationship or that coach-client relationship. And so we've got the coaching clients perspective. We've also got the certifying professionals perspective. And then now, more recently, we've really evolved to a three-pronged approach, which is what you alluded to earlier with our pro coach. And what we found was nutrition coaches were getting certified. Maybe they were getting their own coaching and they wanted to take our system, our curriculum that's been validated in multiple peer-reviewed journals of how can I do this with my clients in a way that's going to give them the same results. And so what we found was one of the biggest obstacles, and you might have had this issue when you first started, was you know the stuff, maybe you've got the clients, but you just don't have time to write the content, or you just don't have the platform to deliver the information. Maybe that's between apps, maybe that's between, you know, how the habits are going to be structured and whatnot. So ProCoach has allowed us to take our award-winning and peer-reviewed and validated coaching model and curriculum and essentially lease it to the coaches like yourself to have all of these habits and skills and practices and actions, our framework of coaching that has done so well for, you know, over 100,000 clients over the years, and put it in the convenience of your own computer or your own tablet or what have you. So ProCoach has really evolved over the years as well. You know, it originally started off as our normalized standard program, our 50 plus weeks of information and daily habits and lessons. And now, as you've talked about, now we've got food journaling in there, options for the clients. There's instant messaging. We have a mobile app now, but also the availability and the opportunity to kind of move some things around. So if your client feels really great about protein, maybe you can skip that habit, or maybe you can move some things to earlier in the process, which you feel will give essentially a bigger bang for your buck result. So it's been really nice to just kind of see how we've been able to extend our reach, because as I continue my career in coaching and academics and just talking with coaches like yourself, to see the impact and what it's done for the industry, it's been really something proud to be part of.
Yeah. When I listen to friends of mine who talk about being on Weight Watchers or Slim Fast, it seems to me that they are typical of what's wrong with the diet industry. You and I have talked about atomic habits, and
right.
For those listeners who've listened to other podcasts, you may remember that Alan Cousins, who was on a few weeks ago, also mentioned atomic habits. I've since picked up the book, and I'm fascinated by it. It's amazing. And then chatting with Adam here, he's been delivering workshops on the whole atomic habits, and I guess you've been using that with your own nutrition coaching. It seems to me that Slim Fast and Weight Watchers and all of those other commercial applications are diets based on an outcome rather than a set of processes and habits. And in the same way that the Atomic Habits books talks about outcome-based exercise training, as once you've finished your marathon, then you basically stop and go back to your previous habits. That's what happens with Slim Fast. And I'm not picking on Slim Fast. Those are just the ones, and Weight Watchers, they're just the two that immediately come to mind. There's many other different ways, systems out there. But the point for me seems to be here that with ProCoach, what we're offering people is a way of creating a strategy that will be lifelong. And I think that's one of the biggest, and we talk about the biggest peeves about individuals and society viewing nutrition. But for me, that seems to be one of the biggest failings when people talk about diet, is that nobody ever thinks long-term about how am I going to be eating when I'm 50 or 60 or 70, or what can I do about my eating now that's going to ensure that when I get to 50 or 60 or 70, I'm still going to be able to do the things that I do now when I'm 56, Adam, but you're 35. So, you know, are you investing in your nutrition now and that of your children so they can lead happy and active lives when they're in their 60s and 70s?
Yeah, Simon, it's such a great concept to dig into because, like you astutely pointed out, the way pro coach or PN in general or, you know, some other coaches are doing is thinking big picture, right? And when you look at the diet industry, when you look at the magazines and the grocery stores and the markets, you're always going to find something, a new heading, a new program, a new challenge that's guaranteed to work in X amount of days, right? And there is no shortage of those programs. And there's no shortage of the coaches promoting those types of short-based, results-driven actions. But like you said, where are all the resources to help them teach self-regulation? Where are all the opportunities to help clients take what they've learned and apply it in multiple domains of their life, right? So for instance, you know, the popular notion of, you know, simply eating less and doing more, right? Calories in and calories out. And while it's not that simple, how does that change for like myself in my mid-30s, finishing a terminal degree with two small children? How does that progress to in my 40s when I might be taking care of, you know, my parents and their quality of health, or when my kids go to college or university, and or if we have to move again, right? Or, you know, in the current state, how do you manage that during a pandemic? And so I think as a coach, and if you're listening to this, understanding not just about getting results right now, but hey, if they do that body transformation, let's say it takes 12 weeks, let's say it takes 24 weeks, it could take a whole year. What do they look like? How do they feel? What are they thinking? And what are the skills and actions they're still currently doing a year after that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really having the opportunity to look at the lens short term to, again, build buy-in, improve motivation, get them results. But will they keep getting that? And can we get them to a place where they're ultimately happy?
So I when I passed my PN level 2 course, I was really, you know, it's a year long commitment in the same way that joining the Pro Coach program is a year long commitment. And I've had some interesting conversations about that regarding the Pro Coach course. I've had people who've signed up for a race in 2 years' time, and they're going, right, I'm going to do the Marathon du Sable in 2 years' time. I'm going to race across the Sahara Desert for 7 days, you know, and I'm going to start training now. So they've committed mentally to a 2 year process. Hey, I've got this 12-month nutrition coaching program that's going to be the best investment. You know, when you work out how much it's going to cost and what it can do for the rest of your life, this is a fantastic investment. Yeah, but it's 12 months long. That's a long commitment. Oh, hold on a minute. You've committed to training for the next 24 months, but you're not willing to commit to something that's actually going to have an impact on what you do in the next 24 years. So that's one thing. The other question I get asked is, so you say you're a nutrition coach, Simon. So you're a nutritionist, because I need some help working out my macronutrients here. So perhaps you can help me and the audience understand what the difference is between a nutritionist and a nutrition coach.
Yeah, another great question.
Adam, just let me preempt it. I'm full of them. You've seen them all. I'm full of them.
Well, it brings up something that's very common in what our clients or the audience, the people that we're trying to serve, right, want to know. And how do they know that you are who you say you are, you're qualified, you're certified, you're accredited, and all of that. And it brings up, and I give credit to the consumers, because now more than ever, especially in the world of nutrition, there are a lot of opportunities to say whatever you'd like yeah. with no repercussions, right? And so it's going to vary from country to country. It'll vary from state to state here in the United States. So for instance, you know, a nutritionist, how we look at it is really somebody that is defined as somebody that can advise you on food, nutrition, eating, and how that impacts their health. But here in the United States, anybody can call themselves a nutritionist without, you know, specific professional certifications. Mm. Now, some may get a master's degree, like you can sit for a certified nutritional specialist certification. So you've got to get a master's degree at an accredited institution. You got to do 1,000+ hours of, you know, supervised practical experience. And then you've also got to sit for some sort of like a board exam, you know, for nutritionist specialists. So that could be one term of nutritionists. We also have registered dietitians, which we know are essentially, you know, the higher standard, where you're getting a full degree, you're getting clinical and hospital experience, and you're sitting for exams. But then what about this gray area of nutrition coach, which I think, you know, for coaches like you and I, maybe it's a little bit less lax. It's more of a colloquial term where is it really just another person that can describe some nutritional strategies and techniques? And when you get into situations of scope of practice, when you get into some gray areas of, well, I'm a personal trainer, can I talk about the effects of nutrition on performance, right? And so it really opens up a unique conversation, not only with the client, but also with the governing bodies around your area. So for instance, you know, I'm very cognizant that I am not a certified nutrition specialist. I am not a registered dietitian. I have higher level certifications and I have advanced degrees. But I'm also careful to note that if it's a medical condition or medical nutritional therapy is needed, that is not my wheelhouse. That is not my scope of practice. And I need to refer out. And that's no different than my work as a mental performance coach, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as we start getting into clinical mental health issues and anxiety and these conditions that aren't the result or causing a drop off in performance, I've got to have a qualified licensed counselor or a certified therapist in my back pocket to help with.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that obviously the definition of dietitian, nutritionist and nutrition coach are different, and it'll be different again in the UK. In my mind, the coach has an understanding of nutrition, but it's more about helping people work through obstacles. So, you know, the person who's working shifts doesn't finish work until 10 p.m., wants to do some training, but equally knows that they need to get some sleep and some food. You know, how do you find a solution for them? Helping clients that you might have that do a lot of traveling that are moving through time zone changes. So how do we help them with their digestion and their nutrition around moving from living in the Middle East to living in the West, on the West Coast of the United States? So what strategies can they put in place, knowing that they're going to be spending a lot of time in hotels and airports? How do we make sure that they continue to eat the best possible food choices, not the ultimate that they have in their own home jurisdiction when they know where the shops are and they've got their own fridge, right, and they've got their own freezer and cooking utilities? But what do you do when you're living in an Airbnb when you don't know the neighborhood and you're in a country where perhaps vegan style eating isn't you know, what do you do when you go to Texas and you want to be a vegan?
Yeah.
You know, how do you find a barbecue place yet?
Yeah. I said, I haven't been to a vegan barbecue place yet, so I'll have to reach out on that one. But
yeah.
All great considerations and scenarios, because that's exactly what a coach can help with, right?
Yeah.
And so I often liken, you know, that nutrition coach is, you know, those are the boots on the ground. That's the first line of defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that I'm studying right now in my results and discussion of my dissertation is, you know, the role of the strength conditioning coach in the application of mental skills with athletes. And it's been really great to go through the interviews and have some of these coaches literally, like, and I quote verbatim, I can do some psychological first aid, right? But I know I need to know when to apply a Band-Aid, and I need to know when it needs a tourniquet.
Yeah.
And if it needs a tourniquet, I better have a personnel near me to help with that. Yeah. And I think the same holds true with nutrition coaching, right? These strategies, these techniques, these tools, how can you get them to make better decisions? How can you work on routines of food preparation and planning? How can you have conversations with them to, you know, work on these meta skills of doing a little bit better consistently over time? Without diving into blood work, without diving into metabolic disease, without diving into specific macronutrient ratios, these are all things that can be applied to the process. But as a nutrition coach, for the most part, you might very well be their strength condition coach. You might very well be their high performance coach or personal trainer. You have built the rapport and positive relationship with them. Use that to your advantage and help them become the best version of themselves.
Yeah, and it seems to me, from the limited work I've done on this, that for the majority of people, you know, for the majority of endurance athletes that I work with, just providing some different strategies and a different lens to look at this, to look at their issues through, will help probably 80% of people get the results they want. It's not nearly as complex or complicated as everybody wants to make out. Now, there will be people who have specific dietary requirements, and for those, I would be putting them in touch with the appropriate professional. And I think that that's something that we always teach in British Triathlon as well, is that you need to know where your boundaries are. And actually, as a coach, you need to build a network of other qualified professionals that you can trust and refer people to, so that you go, oh, actually, do you know what? You've got Crohn's disease, or you've got some specific microbiome issues with bacteria that you need. You need some help on. That's somebody else's. You know, that's way above my pay grade.
It's important, because we often say at PN, you need these people so that you can refer out, but you want to make sure that you're not referring them away.
Yeah.
And I think, as we've talked about in our level two course, is this support network, this team, who's in your corner, right? When a client comes to you for help above or among many myriad of issues, whatever it may be, and you say, I don't know, let me get you in touch with somebody that does, naturally, instinctually, they're going to feel like you're getting rid of them, or that it was a wrong decision. However, if you reframe that as, hey, this is a great question, or this is a unique experience, I'm going to make sure that I put you in touch with the people that study this, that are specialists, and we are going to work together collaboratively, because if she and I, or you and I, can work together, we're going to provide the best support possible. So it's not only important from a liability standpoint, but also from a client-coach relationship. They know that you are invested in them, and that they're going to continue to invest in you because you truly care for them more than a reoccurring payment online that's monthly, or simply just another body transformation photo to put up on your social media.
So typically, how long do you work with people, Adam? Is it an outcome-based thing for most people, and it's like, right, I've achieved this now, so thank you and goodbye? Or do you have people who you've been working with for 5 or 10 years because you are the best health insurance that they've got?
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I'll have to remind my partner about that, and that claim of being the best. But I think it's going to vary, right? Everything is context dependent. I spend a lot of my time working in athletics, directly as a performance coach or indirectly as an advisor. So, you know, I have some clients, and that they might be over the course of 4 years. They might enter university at 18 years old, and it's something that we're constantly trying to fine tune and tweak until they reach their pinnacle at maybe their junior or senior year, right? I've also worked with clients that have specific outcome-based goals, right? I have spring break, right? That's the famous one at the university level. Spring break's in 12 weeks, coach. What can we do? And so I have to dismiss the notions of, hey, you need to eat more than tilapia and spinach, right? Yeah. You're still training. I understand that you have some aesthetic goals, but you also have some athletic goals, and we've got to make sure that you're taking care of your academics, right? So I can't give a definitive amount. I don't personally do like a 12-month program like Pro Coach, because my work with PN directly, as well as my schoolwork, any of the consulting that I do, we kind of take it as we go. We might have some definitive timelines, but like you said earlier, we want to be very invested in that process. So I've had some clients that they get to a point where they feel really, really good, and then we take a break, and then they know where they're at, and then I stay in touch with them over time, and as things shape and resurface, we get back together. So I'm about the long term, like always. I think I've finally reached a point in my career where, you know, I'm in getting invited to weddings and graduation ceremonies and prom photos and all of that, and just it's been really great to see a full circle coming from an athlete to now a coach.
Yeah. You wait until you get to my age, Adam, and you start getting invited to divorce parties and christening of grandkids. I've even had a couple of funerals, unfortunately, but I guess as you get older, they start taking them from your pen, don't they? As my sheep farming friend would say.
I haven't been to a divorce party, so I'm curious if that's a thing on the other side of the pond or
yeah,
what?
No, I joke. It's probably not a divorce party, more of a, I'm on my own now. Come around and help me shift some of this alcohol.
Yeah. Which is a very real thing, right? I myself, you know, found we had some more time during, you know, when schools were closed. I was still taking classes. My wife is a professor, and we're at home more. And these are all things that happen that are going to constantly just bounce up and down through a person's life.
Well, I have a few questions for you about the coronavirus thing, but before then, I wanted to ask you about what the biggest misconceptions there are with nutrition that you see, and perhaps your biggest peeves about how individuals and society view nutrition. We've perhaps talked about the sort of, you know, the the short-termism and, you know, the outcome-based thing, but there must be a few others that you come across constantly and think, oh, no, not this again. Oh, why do we always have to talk about that?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about it because that's what you're asking. And we're going to talk about one that really I struggle with, and I think a lot of clients do, is this idea of binary thinking. Everything to many, many people has to be good or bad. It has to be black or white. It has to be healthy or unhealthy, right? You've got diet camps, and that actually comes into one of the pet peeves I'll talk about in a little bit. But you have these camps that say you can't eat carbs, or you can only eat X amount of carbs, or you can only eat these types of fats, or you have to have this amount. And that's it. There's no wavering from the plan. It's so strict. It's so rigid. And that upsets me not only as a professional in the field, but as a client, right? I've hired my fair share of coaches. I've struggled with my own weight issues. You know, I'm naturally a big guy. So I've gone through the ebbs and flows of stress and its effect on the body. I've gone through the effects of food during grad school and parenting and lack of sleep and all of that. But what I think is tough for clients to understand, and I think for coaches to coach, is to really start thinking, and what I recommend coaches start to do is start to think in continuums. And that's something we really practice here at PN, is we want simple solutions for our clients, but we don't want to advocate simplified thinking. Because when you simplify your thinking, you're ignoring all of the other constructs, all of the other roadblocks and obstacles and intersecting threads of your client's life. So when a client comes to you and says, maybe I'd like to lose some body fat, most coaches might automatically jump to, all right, we're going to put you on a caloric deficit plan. We're going to cut carbs after X amount of time during the day. We're going to ramp up your exercise. Well, that might work, but for how long and at what cost, right? And so I encourage coaches to say, is it really black or white? Is it really healthy or unhealthy? Is this good for you or bad for you? Who makes that decision? And who is going to help guide that client towards understanding and how to make these choices on their own? Because I wish it was simple as this or that, but we all know humans are complex, our situations are very diverse, and it requires a lot of gray area and a lot of exploring the boundaries and even going outside some of those boundaries to explore what's really possible.
Yeah, that whole binary thinking issue, it, within the world of triathlon, and I've asked you a question about low carb and keto and paleo and all of those other sort of nutrition philosophies at the moment. I posted a thread on what fat adaptation means to me, and you know, and I gave an example of what I've been able to achieve. And I wasn't advocating it. I wasn't recommending it. I wasn't saying you should do this. I was just saying this is what it means to me. And I wasn't saying whether it was good or bad. Just this is how I define it. Man, the discussions we had. Mm-hmm. And there were people going on there going, yeah, keto. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. I don't even mention keto. Where did that come from? No, you definitely don't want carbs. It's got to be keto. And then there was a like, you can't do without carbs. You know, it's almost like questioning religion.
It is, and
it becomes so heated at times. You've got to be very careful of what you say.
Absolutely. People used to joke, I think, you know, if you don't know what to talk about, you talk about the weather and you talk about the food, right? So you go to a cocktail party and maybe you're at the buffet table or maybe you're at the, you can't talk about food.
No.
Even as a health and fitness professional, right? Because like you said, and what we're shedding light on is these diet camps, these polarizing radical groups of this is the only way to do things. And we know at PN and our experiences working with over 100,000 people, and even I've seen it with the university athletes I've worked with over the years, is if you create such rigid constructs, that might do well for some people. There's no dismissing that. So because it limits the amount of decisions they make, right? Why does low carb work for some people? Because they naturally build into their identity, I am not a person that eats processed carbohydrates and cookies and crackers, et cetera. So that might relieve them. But what I also think one of my biggest pet peeves are with these diet camps is that as a coach, if you've gone through a specific camp, whether that's vegan, plant-based only, carnivore, snake diet, keto, paleo, et cetera, I'm in all the Facebook groups. I've dabbled in all of them because I think great coaches, they want to experiment, understand what their clients might be going through or thinking. Yeah. Is If it works for you, awesome. It doesn't mean it's going to work for all of your clients. And so the best coaches are adaptable and they find ways to maybe find elements of these ideologies or philosophies of eating to help their clients achieve success.
I'm interested. I've heard of all of those others apart from the snake diet. You'll have to explain that one to me. Maybe it's the lack of snakes in the UK that eliminate that one for us over here.
Yeah. I don't want to steal the thunder of astonishment and surprise, so I'll let you do a little internet search on that. But essentially, it's from what I've gathered, it's really a priority on long periods of fasting and drinking a special concoction known as snake juice, which is really essentially electrolytes and waters and special substances and whatnot. So, yeah. But people see that. They see, again, the power of social media, the power of testimonials. People see that and they think, I can get results like that. Mm. Hey, their intermittent fasting has been shown to be effective for certain people in certain situations at certain times in their life. But it doesn't mean I'm going to advocate intermittent fasting for my intermittent sport athlete who's got we were talking about cricket earlier, right? A cricket tournament over the weekend. That's probably not the best.
Well, you,
but what can I learn from that?
Precision nutrition, for those people who haven't been to the site, and I will put a link to this. You do not have to be a member. They've got some fantastic resources there, some amazing PDFs, and they do have one on, I think John Berardi writes about the various types of fasting, restricted windows of eating, intermittent fasting, two days on, 5 days off fasting, every single fast. And he talks about how he followed those and what they did for him. I'm going to ask you about keto and paleo in a minute. There's a great post or document that I found recently about keto and what works and some of the other diets and who it might work for and who it might not work for. And I found that really interesting, about what was the origins of keto. I think it definitely, like most things, if you restrict what you're eating, you're going to lose some weight, aren't you, in the first moment. So if you look at something through the lens of 5 days, just about everything is successful. Mm-hmm. But keto for training triathletes isn't really probably the best approach. And it makes it fairly clear there. But if in the short term you've just had a head injury, then a keto approach might actually be quite a good thing for you to follow for a few days. And you're probably not going to be training anyway. So again, it's horses for courses, isn't it? Selecting the right approach for the right particular time in your life or the right particular outcome. But still, all of these things need to be sustainable. And I think that's the problem with some of these advocacies and philosophies is that they're great. But how is it going to be when you've chosen to follow that snake diet and you're going out for dinner with your friends and they're all rolling their eyes while you're going through the menu, working out what you can have or having negotiations with the chef about, can you just not cook it like that? And can I have this? It's like, you won't be coming on our dinner dates again. So, do you see yourself having to travel around 15 different stores within the neighborhood, taking a whole day of shopping because your list of ingredients is so complex? You can't go and get them from one convenient place. And so how long are you going to be able to keep that up for?
Yeah. And it's actually interesting, Simon, because I think there are a small, at least from my experience working with clients, there's actually a small percentage, probably much bigger than previously imagined, of people who rely on that rigidity to help them through those social situations, mm-hmm. right? It's much easier to say, let's say you go to your in-laws, if you're still married, you go to a family event and I can't have that because, and you insert some claim about I'm doing an elimination diet, right? Or I'm allergic, I'm gluten-free, or I have a sensitivity to dairy, right? And these are all real things. I'm not saying they're not, but there is some comfort for some clients to rely on a strict set of guidelines because it provides relief from maybe some of the consequences that could stem from that situation. So for a person to say, I eat keto, for instance, that may be the affirming argument they're telling themselves to avoid binging on those sweets and those treats and those cookies and ice creams and what have you. So that's where the power of coaching comes in, right?
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say is understanding the person that you're dealing with.
And it's going to change with every type of situation and different type of life stage, but it's been really unique to see, especially my evolution as a coach, working with kids, how that's evolved as young professionals, right? They're finally off their meal plan. Mom and dad kicked them out of the house. Now they're living in the city, scrounging for whatever they can and avoiding food trucks, to going through parenthood and whatnot, and even working with coaches, is to see how each of those situations are targeted, they're communicated, but they're explored. Because as we talk about at PNU, you're really trying to build and understand the client's story. And that's an imperative part of the process.
Yeah. As you see there, Adam, I'm just moving around a bit. My little 45-minute alarm's gone off. I've been sitting down for too long.
That's a great trigger right there. We were talking about that earlier.
We were.
Get up and do a little bit of movement. That's important. And
on a hot day like this, you certainly notice it when you've been sitting down for too long. Everything's sticky now, but we won't put the wrong impression in people's minds. We touched on the various different philosophies of eating. If probably the safest way of describing them, eating philosophies. Some of the ones that spring to mind that triathletes and endurance athletes particularly are sort of considering right now. Low carb, high fat's very popular among triathletes. And, you know, I've got a couple of friends who are high-level researchers and, you know, physiologists that have used this with their athletes and used it very successfully. There's a lot of, if you listen to Primal Endurance and Primal Blueprint, they do a lot of talking about keto, particularly Mark Sisson there. There's always that thing about people talking about following a paleo diet. Just as an aside, I always think it's quite funny that they talk about the paleo diet, but if you ask them whether they're living in a cave or going on some persistence hunting or, you know, gorging on meat for 2 days until they've run out, you know, they don't do that. They're just eating like Paleolithic man did. So it's only partly paleo, really. But in terms of those approaches to nutrition, what thoughts do you have about those?
Yeah, I think, and as you know this, there none of it's new, right? Everything's what was old is new again. Everything gets recirculated and repopulated. And I mean, even looking at the idea of eating like a caveman, right? I remember giving a lecture on the paleo diet in Australia. This may have been, maybe 4 years now. And, you know, so this is mid-2015-16. And even at that time, we knew that there was evidence that, hey, paleo actually, they ate grains. There were grains available, right? It was, and as you pointed out, right, I made the joke also of like, are you hunting and gathering for berries in downtown Melbourne? You know, like it wasn't happening. And so to have some humor around that, but, you know, even keto has really resurfaced as something that's popular. Again, does it have its place in some situations, especially medically? Absolutely. But they're not new. And as you pointed out earlier, they're all going to work if you understand it and you can be sustainable with it. And I think that's what creates so much struggle for people, because let's say you're doing classic keto, right? Classic keto could be 15 to 20% protein. It could be 70 to 80% fat and only 5 to 10% of carbohydrates. Well, what I've seen, and I've seen this through family parties and discussions online, people think they're doing keto, but they're eating too much protein, because if you're eating too much protein, that's going to break down and provide the energy that your body needs. So now you look at a diet that's primarily fat, 70, 80%, maybe even more. It sounds good, right? You see the advertisements of bacon and eggs and sausage and ribeye steaks and cheeses and creams. But is that something you physically want to eat the rest of your time? And metabolically, is that the best thing for your health? And so any diet camp, any philosophy, if you follow the fundamental principles of thermodynamics and you're able to keep it in perspective of your goals and the process and support that you have around it, if it's paleo, eating more minimally processed foods and prioritizing fruits and vegetables and proteins, great. If it's keto and somehow you're limiting excessive amounts of minimally processed carbohydrates and you're increasing your intake of healthy fats, great. And if it's the standard, modern, essentially balanced diet of 30 to 40% mixed macronutrients, awesome. It's really going to come down to, you know, the KISS principle in weight training. We talk about it, keep it simple, insert Sally, Susan, Steven, whatever it might be. I add another S and make it, can we keep it simple and sustainable? And add another S in my sports psychology, where can we keep it self-determined? Let's give the ownership to the client to see what works best for them and how can we help them navigate that accordingly.
So there's another nutrition coach. I'm using some names here. I don't know whether you're familiar with Dr. Tommy Wood, Nourish, Balance, Thrive. He has a phrase that I've heard him repeat on several occasions now, that if somebody says to him, look, I've been following it for a couple of years now and it's working really well for me, you can't really argue with that. If it's sustainable for them, you can't argue with that. You know, I know that, one of the big discussions we have around low carb, high fat, for instance, is that those people who are driven by what the research says will say, well, there's no research. The research says that this doesn't work. I mean, yet I know that there are some professional triathletes who are following this for whom it's working very well. So you can't say it's not working or it doesn't work. It's working for them. Now, they might be outliers. We know in any research, there's always some people who don't respond at all and some people who are super responders. And then we've got the sort of the middle of the bell curve, yeah. The 80% for whom, it, you know, there's the consensus. So there's always going to be those people who do well on something, even when the consensus is that it doesn't work. So I think that's important as well, is that there's got to be some context as well about that. And going back to that whole paleo thing, you know, again, it interests me that if you were a Paleolithic man living in Alaska, you probably ate fish and whale blubber most of the time because you wouldn't have any vegetables. But if you were living in parts of West Africa, you probably ate a lot of plants and just ate some meat when you could catch it. So, you know, it's too general to say I'm following a paleo diet, because then there could have been so many different nuances of that actual approach.
And it really lends itself to the concept of what's really most important here for a lot of our athletes, especially your crowd with triathletes, is this idea of metabolic flexibility.
Yeah.
Is how can we train our body to essentially be flexible with the amount of nutrients and how those nutrients are used and partitioned inside the body for performance. So you may have a situation where, let's say you take a tactical operator and they get deployed and all of a sudden they're without food for 24, 48 hours, right? Mm-hmm. The body is going to adapt. And, or if you're doing a triathlon, right? I think, correct me if I'm wrong, like the average time is around maybe 12 hours anywhere.
Oh, for an Ironman.
For an Ironman. And so a lot can happen. Well, what happens if the, you know, exogenous carbohydrate station of gummies and I believe one of our coaches, Craig Weller, calls it exercise candy, right? What happens if it gets knocked over, right? Yeah. And so, and Dr. Mike T. Nelson, incredible professor in the States, he talks a lot about metabolic flexibility, but it's a concept that is probably looking to be more important than we originally thought, because you're not always going to have, you know, that stick of grass-fed butter near you.
I mentioned the discussion on fat adaptation, and there was a couple of people who said, well, you know, surely my body is pretty good at working out what it needs. But it seems to me on looking further that actually if you feed it with refined carbohydrates and refined sugars and processed carbs in the form of energy gels and energy drinks and energy bars, it can become a bit wedded to the idea of consuming carbohydrates all the time. And the body sort of then becomes a little bit rusty at adapting to burning fat. And what we're trying to do there by perhaps removing those refined and processed carbs is to train the body to be a bit more receptive to burning fats. So we can lose that ability, can't we, to be metabolically flexible, and we have to retrain it. It's not always there if we follow the wrong dietary path.
Right. And I think what's the key concept to remember for a lot of the listeners is anytime you're adding fuel during exercise, your body's naturally going to wants to break that down first. So if we're constantly supplying the fuel in the bloodstream through gels and syrups and juices and candies and what have you, you're never giving the body an opportunity to dive into the storage and to figure out, hey, which fuel is going to be more efficient. Exercise biochemistry hasn't changed. We know that carbohydrates are the preferred fuel for short to medium intensity activity, or excuse me, high intensity activities, right? Fats, yes, you're going to get more energy from that when it's broken down. However, it comes at a cost of time. So blending that and figure out where that happens, at what point during the race or during your training or during your own day-to-day eating, it's going to take some balancing. So like you said, it could very well work for that person. However, what happens in a situation, let's go back to the Ironman, where maybe you're doing it in Hawaii and the humidity is atrocious. Now you have environmental considerations to consider. Maybe you have race considerations. And so now you have added stress. All of these intertwine and create these feedback loops that can really cause disruption for the system. So your ability to be adaptable is super important here.
It's been quite interesting for me on this journey because I was one of those people. I started triathlon 25 or 30 years ago. So we used to get copies of Triathlete magazine from the US, and it was the big race in Chicago was sponsored by Mrs. T's pierogies, and there were recipes in the back of the British magazine from Chef Carbo Load, and it was all about the pasta party and getting as much spaghetti down your throat as you could in the day before the race, and bread with every meal and rice with every meal. And man, I looked like a carbohydrate. And I was invested and engaged in that culture for years. And I think it probably was reading the book Primal Endurance that was written by a couple of ex-pro triathletes that sort of looked at whether we actually needed to be consuming quite as many carbs, and particularly the processed ones, as we do. But I recognize those situations where people say, yeah, but I get hungry really quickly. I feel like I need food. I feel like I get cravings for sugar. And since I've weaned myself off that, I no longer have those cravings. And I've heard other people say that they've noticed that their blood sugar is more balanced, so they don't get highs and lows in energy. They don't get those mood swings. They sleep a bit better. They don't wake up hungry. If they miss a meal, they don't notice that they're hungry as much. I'm sure there's far more going on here as well, and there's a physiological impact, and there's a psychological input as well. But I'm sure that there's something to this about the body being used to having so much carbohydrate fed into it, and perhaps, you know. And again, for those listening, please don't write to me and tell me that there's nothing wrong with carbs. I absolutely agree with you that there isn't, but perhaps we do eat too much and too much of the wrong sorts, and we need to sort of get that all figured out, really.
Yeah, and I mean, for what it's worth, even if we broke it down to the simplest concept, right? If you're minimizing the essentially very processed carbohydrates, right, that they're used to, and you start eating more minimally processed foods like whole grains and more vegetables and healthy fats, naturally you're going to slow down the digestion. Naturally, it's going to slow down and stabilize blood sugar, and it's going to keep you feeling fuller longer, and even simply by slowing down your eating, right? So yeah. It's amazing. I was, you know, going through some programs and just, you know, checking out some different diets when all the documentaries came out on vegan only or plant-based only. You know, I did my own N-is-1 experiment. I ate completely plant-based for an entire week, no animal products whatsoever. And so it was amazing how full you are when you make your own soup with, you know, two cans of, or a can of black beans, a can of chickpeas, and a little tomato sauce. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'm all set. It's been like 7 hours. Well, I'm not hungry. Well, it's because of the food that you put in. So as anything, you know, it takes a process of what does the data show you? Where are they pointing you? And what outcomes are you getting from it? And what decisions are you going to learn and move forward with?
Yeah.
Look at what it's trying to show you.
The next question then, Adam. Again, you hear a lot of people talking about, I need a sports nutritionist. I'm doing triathlon. It's not my life. It's not my job. I don't earn money at it. I spend maybe 8 to 10 hours a week training for triathlon or training for marathon or something. So I need a sports nutritionist. I'm always like, yeah, but what about the other 158 hours in the week then? Do you need a sports nutritionist for those? So maybe you could clarify where there's actually a difference between everyday nutrition and sports nutrition. I mean, do we need specific foods to fuel our bike riding and our running, or do we just eat a little bit more at the times when we're training of the normal food?
I don't want to offend the sport nutritionist friends. No, go on.
Let's be equal opportunity offenders. We can make sure we don't ignore anybody if there are offenses.
Well, we don't. But you know, and I'm a member of those organizations, and I'm very good friends with the sport nutritionists that work at high level universities and colleges. And like you said, Simon, what about the other 150 plus hours throughout the week? And so we've realized, we've learned, we've gained wisdom over the years, even at PN, of what about all of the other behaviors and habits and skills that they need? So my professional opinion, no. I think adding the word sport in front of nutrition coach can simply be a marketing tool and a gimmick to, again, you know, build some credibility within a specific niche, right? So if I say I'm a nutrition coach, that's one thing. If I add the word sports nutrition in front of that, now I've targeted athletes and their parents and teams. And yes, I may talk about some things like nutrient timing, maybe a little bit more. I may talk about things like calorie and carb cycling or high and low days. We may address supplementation, but you look at any great pyramid of quality nutrition, whether that's at PN or anywhere else from a governing body, you're going to see the fundamental, what we call level one practices at the bottom. So yeah, sport nutrition, yeah. Can I have some interesting changes around how fuel is utilized around activity? Sure. Do I need to always have a quick digesting, rapidly absorbable snack 20 minutes prior to liftoff? No. So what am I eating the two to three hours prior to activity? What type of shake could I have during activity? Do I need a post-workout shake? I gave a presentation at the American College of Sports Medicine 3 years ago, and the research was very clear. Hey, eat well before, eat well after, you got about 24 hours to get all your nutrients in, you're going to be okay. But again, things will change for the person that competes multiple times per day in hot and humid conditions, et cetera. So at the end of the day, quality nutrition is knowing what to put in your body and when to put it in and how it really relates to the context of your goals and purpose. And I think that you're going to be just fine.
So this golden window of 60 minutes straight after training session, is that more about marketing and about, if you you might not feel hungry, but you've got 60 minutes, so it's much better to get this sports drink in here?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to play both sides of the coin here. As a researcher and as a speaker in this domain, I know from the white papers that for many people, it's not a thing. However, because I know the rules, I can break them. And that's something one of my mentors always told me. When I'm working with kids that already struggle with proper calorie intake and making proper choices, you better believe I'm talking about what I call the power hour and using metaphors of how their muscles are wide open for nutrients and it's going to stimulate recovery and it's going to improve the rate of glycogen replenishment. Because guess what? As you've learned in James Clear's work as well, if I can get them into a habit of drinking a post-workout or intra-workout shake, it's an easy time to get extra calories in, which they're going to struggle with.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I stack that habit on, now maybe we're doing some soft tissue work at the end of training. Now maybe we're doing some deep breathing to stimulate the parasympathetic system. Now all of a sudden, they're going to follow that up with a quality post-workout meal. So is it for everybody? No. Could it be beneficial? Possibly. Are there specific languages and scenarios I might use it with and really hone in on it? 100%.
It's another, maybe it's, again, I'm talking about the people who are part of my tribe, so I don't want to offend them, but when we talk about nutrition and I ask for nutrition questions, I'll get probably 20% of them, or what should I have on race day? Like this, you know, race day, there's 365 days in a year. You've got maybe one or two big races and you're asking me about what I've asked you to ask me questions about how to perform better throughout the year, you know, train better, get better training adaptations. And you want to know what to eat on race day. And I remember when one of my first rugby league clubs that I worked at was a lower level club and the players weren't, you know, they were seeing out their time. They were amateurs. They were doing it for a little bit of weekend spending money. They weren't that interested in nutrition, but the coach wanted to go places. And he said, right, Simon, we need to get them into a hotel. We need a really good pre-match meal. And I'm like, you know, they've probably got 20 other eating opportunities during the week where they aren't eating very well. That's not going to make any difference whatsoever. There might be a psychological benefit that you're paying for their meal and they feel a bit better about that. But in terms of performance, maybe not. So it's interesting to me that people want to know about what, you know, how do I get real precision on my race day, but they aren't getting the precision for 364 days of the year, you know, with the simple habits that we've talked about earlier. And again, to me, it's way more important to be a high performing human on those 364 days of the year and, you know, get things just about right on race day.
It's interesting because, you know, my time in the National Football League, I faced the same issues, right? I was a nutrition coordinator for an elite level organization, working on the road nutrition, coordinating the menus with the hotel staff, making sure that the options around the hotels, like the guys had great options in the locker room during halftime. And you put together this incredible spread. But you also know that, you know, they've got position dinners maybe on that Thursday or Friday before the game is, you know, before they even travel. So, you know, you've got fried chicken and waffles in the meeting room. We were sponsored by a legendary fast food company in the southern eastern United States. And this is what we're serving our guys. And so, you know, that's important for coaches to understand. You're going to pick your battles. But it's also, and we talk about this a lot, and we're working on some materials now, and we talk about this placebo effect, is we can't underestimate that. If people are going to put so many of their eggs in this basket, if they feel that having that pre-game or pre-competition meal is the icing on the cake, well, hey, let's go with it. But again, I think we open that up for an opportunity to talk about the other meals throughout the week, like you talked about.
You mentioned your journey right at the very beginning of our conversation. Since you've been doing the nutrition coaching, what's the biggest shift that you've had in your thinking, particularly since becoming a level two coach, and all the work you do?
Definitely listening more. I remember first starting off, especially as a dual role kind of strength and nutrition coach. That's something that has really shaped my career because I came into coaching, especially at the university level, where there were not a lot of registered dietitian and nutritionists yet. So they looked to the strength coaches, right, to get them bigger and faster and cut some weight, right? And I felt such an immense amount of pressure to get them to their outcome. Lose weight, gain weight. I tried to provide them with all the solutions. Here's all the meal plans. Here's all the POM sizes of protein. This is what you have to do. Why aren't you doing it? And especially after going through level two, and I went from student right into teaching. So you want to talk about baptism by fire, so to speak, learning how to be a better coach and then teaching coaches how to be a better coach was a radical transformation for me. And so I think a few of the areas was certainly understanding the process of listening and letting your clients explain their situation, working with them to understand, as I said earlier, about all the things, the factors that are happening in their life. What's affecting their physical health? What about their emotional health, their existential health? How does this tie into the decisions they're making about food? And then secondly, kind of removing yourself from their actual results. In performance coaching, you know, I've sat in high-level meetings with sport coaches where they want to know how much better they are, right? I worked where one coach, his number one KPI was neck size. And so it didn't matter the type of man I was trying to create or the individual of society. It was about, well, did you get their necks bigger? And it was like, we're a little too close to the forest to see the trees here. But when I realized that them getting their results or not getting the results wasn't explicitly my fault, or because of my amazing coaching, it really provided a lot of relief, not only from, I won't say getting me off the hook, but actually involving the client more and making them, putting them in the driver's seat and me just kind of hanging out in the back seat or in the passenger seat, riding shotgun, guiding them, helping them, shaping their path that we talk about at PN a lot without the notion of they did it or they didn't do it and it's all because of me.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point because with regards to coaches is when something goes wrong, they're always very quick to beat themselves up. But perhaps they don't, you know, maybe not the same when things go right. And I use that analogy of being the satellite navigator, you know, is that you've asked me how to get from A to B and I've given you a set of instructions and you're still driving the car. And I'm just giving you the instructions. I'm one of the things that you do in the PN level two course is about noticing and naming, about being observational but not judgmental. So you know, your satellite navigation will say, "Please make a left turn now," and "Please make a left turn rerouting your journey, it doesn't sit there and go, oh, God damn it, you've gone, you were supposed to go left there, you idiot, and you missed a turn. Mike, I can't trust you to do anything properly. It's not judgmental. It just notices you've gone off target and tells you when to make the next turn. But you're still driving. So all I'm doing is providing you with a set of instructions, and we can take the fastest route, we can take the scenic route, we can take the most economical route, but you've asked me to get you from A to B, and that's what I'm trying to do. And now I'm just going to sit there and give you guidance depending on how you drive this car.
And the key word there, right, and we hear it's recalculating, right? Rerouting.
Yep.
Making adjustments, adapting. That is the entire coaching process, right? You as a triathlon coach might say, here's your weekly training split. You're going to do, you know, correct me if I'm bastardizing the coaching here, but maybe you have a speed workout on this day. We're going to do a distance work on this day. We're going to do hills. We're going to do strength training. We're going to do some dry land, so whatever it might be. And then, well, how did it work? Well, I felt crummy. I'm beat up. I, you know, bonked, you know, 10 miles in. Okay. Well, we're going to revisit this plan and we're going to adjust and set a new course of action for next week. And I think that's something a lot of clients don't understand. They think that, and it's not their fault, because they read this in the media, they see it on social, they visit with their friends. Here's the one plan that will fix everything. Mm. Nutrition coaching, especially at the high particular level where people are messing with macronutrients and adjusting grams here and adjusting grams there, you have to tinker a lot in the process. You've got to see what works now, but what works now isn't going to continue to work. And we talk about that, the cost of getting lean. We're working on a resource now, but the cost of being a high level athlete, we forget that because I may pick up skills very easily right now, or like you said, any diet can be successful after the first 5 days. Okay, great. But it doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. It's going to require constant adjustment and tracking accordingly.
Yeah, again, James Clear refers to that in Atomic Habits about the ice cube in the room. You know, you look at it at 26 degrees, it's still an ice cube. At 27 degrees, it's still an ice cube. At 28 and 29 and 30 degrees, it still looks like a flipping ice cube. And then all of a sudden, 31 degrees, it started to melt. And at 32 degrees, it's disappeared. But there's only been slow changes in what's happening. And yet the ice cube has been slowly melting. So it just because you can't see something happening doesn't mean something isn't happening. And I think, again, I had somebody write to me recently saying, oh, my running appears to have plateaued. What, anything I can do to change? And I'm like, well, before you change your running, look at other things you're doing in your lifestyle. Have you been under more stress? Have you been sleeping as well? Have you been eating differently? And then maybe your body, if you made some quick progress, maybe your body's just taking a breath and resettling itself, and then there'll be another one. It's never always a linear progress. It's progress plateau, sometimes going backwards. But look at the long-term trend over a year, not just the, again, it's that long-term versus short-term outcome type thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a call to action for coaches now to think about what are all of the other key performance indicators that you can use and set up with your client that isn't a direct result of a shorter or bigger measurement, that isn't time or speed based. What are all the subjective things that you can involve in your coaching practice to gauge success? Because I grew up in the era, again, I'm still growing up, but everything was show me your pictures, show me how much body fat percentage you lost, or what were your girths. There are going to be a wealth of clients that want nothing to do with those, even as athletes. And so you as a coach, how can you find other metrics to support them, not only physically, but mentally and socially as well? I think that's critical in that coaching process.
Adam, we touched on the coronavirus issue. It's still affecting most of the world, and it's probably going to be having an influence on our lives for at least a few months, if not a few years. Specifically during the last few months, What changes in eating behavior did you notice? You mentioned yourself there. You mentioned how things had changed for you. So let's touch on that one first. What did you notice about your own nutrition and eating behaviors? Because we ought to, as coaches, we ought to fess up here and let people know that we're not perfect. We're human beings, and we have the same psychological frailties and concerns that our clients do, don't we? And that probably makes us more authentic and vulnerable and trustworthy in some ways. So what sort of things did you notice that were positive, and what things were you perhaps looking at and wrinkling your nose up at?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you in terms of the authenticity, because coaches want to work with people like themselves, right? So if you're an influencer on social media and you're shredded and single digit body fat, and you just happen to be, you know, posed in front of a sports car in a mansion, right?
You mean you're not real?
Yeah, exactly. They're not. They're gonna be like, "What is this?" Right? Well, you hope they say that, right? But I'll be honest. So I was in my last semester of my coursework before, you know, wrapping up data collection for my dissertation, and everything just hit, right? It was right before spring break. We were on a little ski holiday with our family. Everything shuts down. And then, as you know, the markets and grocery stores simply just freaked. Everybody took everything that they could. We didn't know what was coming up. And what I did notice, what we seemed to have a lot of in the stores, were all of my favorite childhood microwavable, yummy potato products and highly processed carbohydrate snacks like mini pizzas and Hot Pockets and all of these, you know, microwavable and frozen French fries. And so I bartered with myself. I validated why I was buying these things and I was enjoying in these pleasures of my childhood because there was nothing else left in the freezers, right? Or it was a stressful time. How are we going to get back to class? What's going to happen with my workouts with the team? How is my employer going to be able to support me while I'm trying to homeschool my kids and support my spouse and her journey as well? So I actually, you know, for a few weeks, found myself eating a little bit more, found myself eating foods I normally don't eat because my routine was thrown off, and found myself, honestly, like with the amount of time I did have and the amount of time I was spending outside, maybe drinking more than I ever thought because you didn't know if it was Tuesday, Friday, or Sunday. Everything was just kind of happening. But I was conscious of that. And I think that's one of the strategies I recommend a lot of clients. You brought it up earlier with noticing and naming. And in sports psychology, really, we're talking about mindfulness. We're talking about bringing conscious awareness to where you are right now without judgment. But when I work with kids, you say the word mindfulness and they don't really understand or they attach some sort of stigma to it. And so I've kind of shifted it now towards, I was listening to a podcast a few weeks ago, but this concept of, you know, shift into neutral. I grew up with a Jeep Wrangler. I bought it on my 18th birthday, standard transmission. I loved it for 9 years until I had to sell it because it wasn't a great family car. But when you're in neutral, you're not necessarily thinking about when to go faster. You're not thinking about when to downshift and to go slower. You're just there. So I would often shift into neutral when I was coasting down a hill or when I saw a red light. And I was able to just be there, be still, and call attention to what I was doing, what I was thinking, and how that was ultimately making me feel. And so throughout that process, that's actually been one of the most common things I've recommended to my clients and even to my family members. You know, we like to say things like slow down, right? Or be where your feet are, you know, take a breath. But I think you need a trigger for that. So when I say, all right, let's get into neutral, let's just slow down right here and get here, then it can open up a conversation for that. And I've been very fortunate. I've used this situation, this unfortunate pandemic, to really take advantage of things I didn't have. I'm spending more time with my family. Some days are better than others, right? But I'm not being hustled, mixing classes and getting to class and coming back and going to kids' sporting events and, you know, getting on conference calls in the classroom and whatnot. So I've been able to train more and work out more. I've lost a considerable amount of weight and I've really rekindled the relationships with the people closest to me. And I'm very lucky to do that, but that definitely took some work. Oh, looks like you're muted there, Simon. You just moved.
Sorry, Adam. Are these the similar behavior patterns that you've noticed in clients then? And what were the most common ones that you observed over the last few months?
Yeah, I think definitely one of the most common ones that continues to resurface, whether it's a pandemic or trauma or just normal day-to-day life, is, you know, this idea of emotional and stress eating. Mm-hmm. I think many clients did, you know, talking with even some of the kids. I was working with kids that had their spring senior sports season just ripped away from them. And now I'm working with kids that are having their senior fall sports season ripped from them with American mm-hmm. football. So I certainly saw a lot of emotional and stress eating because what we know at PN and just through psychology in general is, you know, every behavior is done in an attempt to solve a problem. And whether that's through food or whether that's through other maladaptive tactics of coping, we really want to get to the root of that. So I saw that. I saw a lot of lack of planning. People, again, I you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Friday, we didn't know. But because of the change in routine, we went from a very structured, maybe an overly scheduled routine to no routine at all. So now breakfast was at a different time or entirely skipped. I saw that a lot with clients where they were trying to balance the struggles of homeschooling and meeting with their employers and conference calls, and maybe they wouldn't eat all day. And then most of us know that's usually set up for disaster at later at night. We also saw, you know, increases in alcohol intake and lack of physical activity, despite the amount of time that we gained by not commuting and going to other events. The sheer just being stuck in this hamster cycle of Groundhog Day, and it's the same thing over and over again. It, you know, I even felt it. Like, I have an incredible garage gym that I built over the collection of my years of coaching, and it's 10 feet from my office, and I couldn't get into it because I just was so stuck in the dysfunctional thought patterns of why is this happening?
It's an interesting point you made there about the emotions and about how, you know, a change in your circumstances can, you know, rock your emotions and cause changes in behavior. Something we talked about earlier about the journey, you know, and about the satellite navigation is we hear people say, I'm on a diet tomorrow. I need to lose some weight, so I'm going on a diet. But then they go to a party and they're at the party with their friends and somebody offers them a drink and that leads to two. And then there's some nibbles there. So they have some peanuts and they have some olives and then they have some canapes and they have some ice cream and some cake. And before you know it, they've gotten to the champagne and they've eaten half of the buffet. And then they feel like the whole diet's completely, well, that's it. It's all over now. What's the point? So the diet's broken and then they give up and they're back to square one. A short-term emotion, but always think about that in terms of a journey. If you take a wrong turn, you don't sort of get out of the car and throw the keys away into the ditch and stamp your feet and sit on the curb and just sort of say, well, that's it. I'm not proceeding on this journey anymore. We make a U-turn, but there's no difference. But I think perhaps with eating, we aren't as in control of our emotions. We aren't to use your word from earlier, one that I'm used quite a bit about mindful. We're not as mindful. This is just a long-term journey. And if we've made a wrong turn on this evening, you know, we've been furloughed, we're off work, we're working from home, the children are at home. It's a temporary thing. It's not going to be forever. If our nutrition goes awry for a few days, like you mentioned, that's just a wrong turn. It doesn't mean we've sabotaged everything. And being mindful of that, we know what steps we need to take. And this is where coaching comes in, isn't it? It's helping people to retrace those steps and get back onto the right path and just write off the wrong turn. You know, you don't dwell on a wrong turn, you're making a journey, but we seem to dwell on a wrong turn we make with our nutrition for some reason.
Absolutely. And I use the analogy of using an iPhone or an Android, you know, a smartphone of some nature. If you drop the phone, you're going to pick it up and you're going to be like, ah, and you're going to hope that you didn't crack the crystal on the front. And guess what? You're probably going to maybe put a cover on it, right? Or maybe you get an attachment to your belt. And so I work with kids and I'm like, your phone drops. You're not just going to like smash on it and step on it and be like, mom, dad, give me a new one. Like, that's not going to happen. That's such a big investment. And it's, I don't know if it's ironic or just interesting how, you know, our company's name's Precision Nutrition, but yet we're the very opposite of precision. We're talking about progress. We're talking about continuums. We're talking, how can I do a little bit better today? And how can I go from eating less to eating more? Or making one small change and building on that accordingly. We know that through the compound interest and the law of accumulating interest and the slight edge and all of these, you know, resources that are available to us. But it challenges what we know in psychology as the fresh start effect, is we naturally gravitate towards a definitive timeline, like a Monday morning or like a January 1 or tomorrow, because we have issues. We have an inability to recognize and deal with the discomfort as it comes up. So again, I don't want to speak for everybody, but for most of us, we then tend to just affirm our behaviors and give us an out to redo it tomorrow, because it's hard for us to deal and sit with imperfections. That's why you see, it's the same thing with social media. How many filters do we have for people? I remember running a gym and kids were taking pictures of it to put it on the gram, and they would continuously take multiple photos. because they weren't satisfied with those imperfections. And so throwing it back into food and the challenges of be okay with doing okay and not letting it derail you, because that fresh start effect, man, there's 52 Mondays in a year and you don't want to keep restarting. It's you're just going to go back further and further and further again.
Yeah. And again, talking of the long term, you know, if you can get to 12 months time or 24 months time and look back to today and say, have I moved that needle to the right in some way? Have I made things slightly better? Have I not bothered? Have I tried? And it's that again. It's not just listening, is it? As coaches and as athletes and as clients, it's about reflecting and thinking, well, how did that happen? You know, why did things go wrong? Was it about the eating, or was it because of my emotions? Was it because I lost my best friend? Was it because I lost my job? You know, and understanding the contexts of that situation and to why things happened. How a coach and having somebody to be accountable to can actually help you to sort of focus on the right things here.
And that's one of the principles, you know, James talks about is enlisting the support of others, right? If you want a habit to stick, you know, make it accountable to someone or something else. So whether that's donating to a charity or whether that's enlisting the support of somebody that you care about, that I did that. I had an old college roommate of mine reach out and said, hey, you want to do a 6-week challenge? And I am the furthest thing from doing challenges, but I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Like, we're going to do it. And he's like, all right, we're going to put a game of golf on it and a steak dinner. I'm like, you got it. I'm like, here are the rules. I made an nice Excel spreadsheet on Google and I whooped him and I'm going to collect on my payment. But it was interesting to now a little subtle accountability with a minor prize. All of a sudden was like, I'm checking my rings. What are my steps at? Did I get my workouts in? What am I weighing in at? Am I making a better choice? So whether that's through an accountability buddy, like a roommate or a spouse or somebody in your family or a friend, or simply realizing it's okay to get help. Again, looking back on it, like you said, 12 months ago, right? Am I further past that continuum down the needle? Did I move the needle closer or farther away? And what were the resources I had available to me? Because everybody gets coaching, whether it's marriage coaching, academic coaching, nutrition coaching, fitness coaching, everybody's getting advice and mentorship and guidance from somebody close to them in their circle. They may not just tell you about it.
Here's a couple of quick questions for you before we finish, Adam. One thing I asked some of the coaches that we're mentoring to do was to use a traffic light system, red, amber, green. So red would be things you've stopped doing. Amber would be things you continue to do, and green would be things you've started doing. Okay. So I'm going to ask you as a coach, what have you during the last few months, what have you realized about the way you coach that actually you're going to stop doing? What are you going to keep doing, and what are you going to start doing more of?
Love it. I use the same thing in my sports psych consulting. So the things that I have stopped doing, do you want this from a coaching perspective or things that I've done personally?
You could do one personal, one coaching.
Okay, great. So one thing I've stopped doing is trying to relate to my clients of understanding, I know exactly how you feel, right? Or understanding that, hey, we're in this storm together. You know what? We might be in the same storm, but we're in completely different boats. A client that I've worked with who had a season-ending injury and is now battling financial aid issues because of the pandemic is in a completely different boat than another person. So I've really tried to stop normalizing how they are doing and really trying to get into the same boat as them because they're not. So that's a big area that I've stopped doing as a coach. And I've always worked on that because as a coach, you want to express your understanding. You want to be empathic. But to be truly empathic, you want to be able to attempt to understand what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. But you have to have the ability to step out of it as well and not bring it down to a level that it's not at. Personally, I've actually stopped eating when I'm 80% full. A simple concept that we teach at PN, but because of a large amount of time that I've had at home, something that I've really stopped is eating to beyond that because of my crazy schedule. So I would often come home after a long day of commuting and working and whatnot and eat to an uncomfortable full, even though I was well within my macros or calories that I know works for me. Mm. So really just kind of sitting with that. So I'd say those are two things. One thing that I started doing was actually prioritizing two workouts a day instead of trying to sandwich in one. I was a little bit of stress of trying to get up before the kids and really crank it out or hop on before a podcast or another conference call or meet another school deadline. I broke them up. So now I kind of bookend them. I try and get one before the kids wake up. If I don't, I usually get one around lunch and then I've closed that at night. So that's something that has really worked really, really well for me. And what I've started to do as a coach is now with the increased amount and attention to other areas of the life, I've started to do more frequent check-ins and I've really started to do a better job with the students I mentor, with the coaches I work with, but to really keep a running dialogue and notes. And I've done this from time to time, but now more than ever, what changes are going on in your life? What seems to be an area that you need help with, you're struggling with, but also what are all the good things? I think starting more, like what are the bright spots, right? Life may suck right now for a lot of us, but there are some really good things there that I want to call out. So I've really done a better job, I'm proud of calling out those good opportunities and shining some positive in both of our lives. And from an Amber perspective, I believe this was to continue to do, right?
Yep.
Something that I've continued to done is, as we've talked about earlier, is shift our mindset from outcome-based to process-based. Getting a PhD has been challenging. There's no doubt about that. Getting a PhD during a pandemic is still challenging. And I have been frustrated with my attempts and I just want to get this done. Once this is done, I'm going to have so much more time. But in reality, I get overwhelmed by the amount of pages I still have to read or the articles I have to review. And so I really continue to do what I'm continuing to do now of chunking and blocking off and setting checkpoints of, okay, read these two articles, write two drafts. Get this interview done. Transcribe this. Check for clarification here. So giving myself my own scorecard there. That's in my personal life. And then as a coach, I think continuing to bring your best self before you can take care of others. Understanding that if you don't take care of yourself, you can't bring your best self.
Yeah.
And that's something I've really tried to bring back to the forefront. To be the best father, the best spouse, the best business partner, the best coach, the best employee, I'm going to continue to take care of myself because I've put things on the back burners for too long because of everything else I was trying to do. This situation has forced me in a good way to reprioritize what matters most, the big rocks, so to speak, and really allow me to be a better role model, a better coach, a better role, whatever that we hold in other areas of our life, because I'm doing a better job with me.
Yeah, because you're the asset, right? And we need to protect the asset.
And if we don't have assets, all we got are liabilities. So
absolutely. Adam, it's been fantastic chatting with you. I've got one last task for you. Hopefully you saw that question at the end there. No doubt there'll be people listening to this who are shaking their head and nodding their head and going, oh, I've done that in the last few months. Oh, no, I've stopped doing that. You know, I shouldn't have done. For those people who've just got a little bit out of sync with their normal behaviors, with their eating patterns and everything, you know, with your nutrition coaching head on now, some simple behavior changes that we could try to adopt to help us get back into our rhythm that we had before. You know, going on, thinking perhaps about the atomic habits, you know, little things that we can change that are going to stick over a few months that we might have got out of touch with.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll go back to shift into neutral first. I think before any action, you need awareness. So shifting yourself into a neutral pattern of thought, bring awareness to what you're feeling, what you're thinking, and how you're acting. Do a little self-inventory. Take some time for yourself at a local coffee shop if it's socially distant. Take some time in the morning before the kiddos wake up and take a little bit of an inventory in your position on the field right now if we're going to continue with the sport analogy or where you are on the track. So I think that would be number one. And then two, we talk about this often, kill the shoulds. There's been a lot of discussion about, well, you have all this free time, you should be in better shape. Or now you're eating most of your meals at home. Well, you should be eating healthier. I think to recognize that there are no absolutes, right? You should not do things a certain way because, again, we're all in a different boat during the storm. So that would be number two. Number three, I would say to, I think one of the biggest factors you can change is really how to shape your environment, right? And that's something James talks about. That's something we talk about. How do we shape the path as coaches? But during that inventory process, take a look at your environment. If you're making less than stellar choices, or if you're gravitating towards foods that are removing value from your performance or health versus adding value, ask yourself, why is it here? Where can I put this? Can I put it in a different location? Can I strategically place that type of meal on a specific type of day? Maybe it's a day of higher activity. Maybe it's a day of more remembrance. I often talk about clients, trying to get them to create red letter days. Red letter days on calendars are important days. And can we make that memorable there? So shaping the environment in terms of food, the choices that they make there, can they craft their workout space? Can they remove their bed space from their writing space to a workout space? Mm-hmm. Can they create a little bit of routines? And I think that would be the final one is wherever you are, you can start now. You can start by simply adjusting to your circumstances because this is the new normal for the foreseeable future. Get back into a small rhythm and routine of things and take it slow. Nobody is asking, hopefully, you to not read an hour of personal development a day. Nobody's asking for you to do 20 minutes of meditation each morning with your coffee. Nobody's asking you to run 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kilometers a day. Start with one foot in front of the other. Be conscious of how you feel and how you think and how that enables you to act or not act and take action. And the smallest change we know will compound into repeatable actions that will eventually turn into sustainable habits.
Just what I'd expect from a top coach, Adam. Little things, easy to do, tick off the boxes, get the process done, and then look back in 12 months and see what journey you've come on and how far it is.
And I'll actually add to that, track this.
Yeah.
Like if you can, you want to be able to go back to this. I think for many, many years, even for the people out there in the job market, they're going to ask you, what did you do during this time? How did you get better? How did you move closer to your goals? Have tangible proof of the awesomeness that you're doing. We're taking videos with our kids. We're taking photos. We're writing journals. We're going to look back on this. And when our kids are older and it's like, what did we do when that COVID thing hit? Hopefully just the first and last time. Well, let's talk about all of the things we were able to accomplish because of the incredible support that we had around us and what was important to us. I think that's important as well.
It's been a great conversation, Adam. Who would know that we only started chatting together 90 minutes ago? I feel like we've known each other for a lot longer than that.
I'll tell you what, I haven't been to London in quite a few years. I think it's been about three now, but I will be sure when I cross, whenever that might be, we'll sit down and we'll have a chat. Hopefully we'll be able to talk more.
Well, you'll need to land in London, my friend, and come a bit further north. I'm from Yorkshire.
Oh, yes.
It's Yorkshire, for all those Yorkshire listeners, it wouldn't be right of me to not state that it's God's own country. And there'll be a little cheer going up amongst the Yorkshire listeners now. But you're most welcome to come up here and we'll share a pint of warm Yorkshire bitter and take in the Yorkshire sights. In the meantime, before you make your way to London, Adam, I'm sure people after listening to you would love to find out a little bit more about you, follow what you're doing, maybe even ask you about some coaching. So how can they follow you and where can they get in touch with you?
Sure. I would probably say the best version would be my email right now because I am in the last sprint of finishing my coursework. So adam.fite@precisionnutrition.com. So you're best to reach me there right now because that's priority number one. I am on social media. So Twitter and Instagram @AEFite, F-E-I-T. However, I've taken a little bit of a summer sabbatical until I get this done before my defense. But I hope you're still listening to us. I hope we've provided some value for the last 90 minutes. I know I've had a great time and I appreciate the opportunity, Simon, but if things come up from anything from nutrition coaching to mental performance coaching to strength conditioning, I would love the opportunity to chat and help you. So yeah, thanks again.
And I'll add a bit onto that. If anyone is thinking about doing either the Precision Nutrition Level 1 coaching course or Precision Nutrition Level 2 to become a nutrition coach, I, of course, will give it a fantastic testimonial. But if you want a little bit more in-depth information from somebody who's been involved with the development, of course, then Adam would be your person there. But Adam Feight, all the way from Massachusetts, appreciate you spending some time with us today. It's been absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you, Simon. Thanks again.
Okay. Listeners, thanks again for being here. Of course, we'll be back next week and we will bring you another amazing guest. Bye for now. Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.